I maintain correspondence with quite a number of people. Obviously, there's Cybercast, so there's people out there. I've actually done counseling over the phone with people who listen to the Cybercast, because in their mind, they didn't have a pastor, but indeed, they listened here. So there's church areas that we've been to with the opportunity to travel. There's people you meet. I maintain correspondence not because I'm so correspondent myself, but just simply by the contacts you make over time. There are people that have questions or relationships, indeed, in that way that are maintained. One of those individuals wrote me a memo one time about a very troubling circumstance in his life. He had invested in a business venture, and the venture had failed, and there were significant consequences as a result. He was in trouble. Didn't exactly know how he was going to get out of trouble, and it bothered him. It didn't just bother him a little, it bothered him a lot. But what bothered him as well, besides the consequences, was because that he had prayed for God's active guidance and direction in advance, and it still failed. And he felt like that he had gone to God, and apparently God hadn't really answered. Or he actually felt that God had blessed his effort, but the effort then, in the end, had failed, and he began to question what God's hand in the matter even had been. As he went to God with his desires, he was able to have the contacts necessary to take out this business transaction, and apparently it would appear to make it work. The money was made available to him, which was a considerable sum. There was opportunity for a huge profit, and it looked like an incredible opportunity and a blessing that had been made available to him. And still, when he played it out, it failed. So he commented to me, he says, look, I had prayed about it. I had sought out God's will. Hopefully, we all know what it's like when God does, in a very direct manner, intervene in our lives, show us his will. Might be through healing, or it might be an answer in some specific way to a prayer. It could be when God pours out a blessing on us. I mentioned in a sermon after we came back from Nigeria, and the sermon title was When God Pours Out His Spirit. And I went through and I showed instances of healings and also rebuking of demons that in very dramatic and specific ways all took place, where God had just poured out his spirit in a blessing in that way. So there are times when God's hand is very, very obvious. But there are other times when, from our perspective, it does look as if God has kind of put us on hold. You call somebody, and they say, just a moment, I'm on another line, and then you're on hold. There's times when God puts us on hold. We want an answer. We want direct intervention. We want a response. But it's like there's just a vacancy out there, at least from our perspective. What's happening at those times? You know, I talked to Mr. Hooser, and he refused to step up to the bar and give the whole sermon. Then the teens guessed the Bible study, what it would be. That was Wednesday night at 10 o'clock. And I kind of felt at that point, all of a sudden, I'm under the gun. Got a couple of days. There's a Bible study, then there's a split. And I've addressed this before, but when I speak, I don't want to get up. You know, you have a list, and it has little boxes on it, and you just check off the list. Well, I did this, I did that, I did this. I don't want to get up and speak and just check off the list. Okay, I had to do it, I did it, I'm done. Nobody who speaks and teaches in God's church surely has that perspective. They want to do what God wants them to. They want to say what he shows them and leads them needs to be said. So I'm looking at this on a rather shorter schedule in terms of my perspective, in terms of preparing for last night. And I will say those who were there, the response, the excitement, the interest in the study and the participation was really very good. I enjoyed it very much, and it was a nice opportunity and a good way to start on this weekend. I had an idea for the Bible study, so I began to work on that. I had no idea on the sermon. And when you do that and you go to God and say, God, what do you want done? And it was like there was this silence. Now, I don't know how to describe that to you. I'm not saying I got up and looked for a sign. I'm just saying, in terms of looking to God for guidance and direction, I went to the Bible study and I had something to do and I could work in that way, and then I would turn to the sermon and it was silence. It was just a big vacuum and nothing took place. Now, when that happens, I've always got some notes on my desk where I've been scribbling on an idea or a subject or something that's been on my mind. And I began to look at the notes and said, well, it's no good. I can't use that. That's not really, doesn't seem to apply. And it's like, if you can imagine a well. When you have a well, you can only take the water out of it so fast. The water has to be feeding into the bottom. So in order to pull water out of a well, then there has to be a recharge process. So I thought, well, I'll just need to recharge a bit here. So I go through the magazines and I subscribe to different things and I started just reading some magazines, some articles. I began to go back over subjects that I recently addressed. I asked my family what they thought. And again, nothing specifically worked out. It was like you listen and it's just quiet. So I thought, all right, well, that's happened before, and you just kind of go on. You work on the study, you take care of other responsibilities, you visit a bit and go on, but I felt like God had kind of stepped back. Have you ever prayed to God and it felt like He stepped back in response to the prayer that you had sent up, in response to your circumstance or your crisis? What do you do when God steps back? Look at Psalm 13. Very short, but notice the plea here from David, a man after God's own heart. I don't know what point in his life he was a man after God's own heart. I don't know if he was always a man after God's own heart. I suspect that that's something that God, through leading him, built in. But obviously the proclivity was there. But here's David. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? You ever prayed like that? How long will you hide your face from me? Now, God could hide His face because of our sins, because our sins separate us from God. That's one possibility, but it's not the only possibility. Sometimes God simply steps back. How long shall I take counsel in my soul? How long am I going to ask myself for the answer? Having sorrow in my heart daily, how long will my enemy be exalted over me? This is obviously much stronger than what I was processing. It's on a bigger scale, but it illustrates the point. Consider and hear me, O Lord my God. Enlighten my eyes. Let me see what it is I'm looking for. What do you want? What do you want me to do? Lest I sleep the sleep of death, lest my enemy say I've prevailed against him, lest those who trouble me rejoice when I am moved. I have trusted in your mercy. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord. He says, I'm faithful. I want to be. I trust you. I will. But where are you right now? Why have you stepped back? I will sing to the Lord because He has dealt bountifully with me. I worked through yesterday a number of things, got a lot done. It was a very productive day, but no sermon. And again, I got up there and it's like you pick up the phone and nobody's on the line. I'm going, all right, what's going on? What do you want me to do? Call Dan Deininger, tell him to fire up, get ready? Yeah, what do you want me to do? So I told him, Michelle, finally, a couple hours before Bible study or fairly close to Bible study, I says, look, I know what to do for the study. I don't have a clue what to do for the sermon. I will do the one thing and hopefully do it well, and then I will go to the next. Now, a Bible study, you get home after 10. So I just said, after that, then I will do the next. I said, there must be something that I need to know at the Bible study itself. That's what I told her in advance, and then finished up and walked out the door. Gave the study. Response, again, the activity level, the energy there was very high, very positive overall. And then afterwards, when the study broke up, I walked over and there was Joel and Rick and I forget, one more person was standing there in the group I was trying to remember. David, okay. They were all standing in a little group, and I walked up, and I said, well, what do you think the sermon tomorrow should be about? And they looked at me, are you serious? 10 o'clock at night, Friday night. And the minister walked up to you and says, what should I say tomorrow for the sermon? They said, are you serious? I said, yes, yeah, I'm serious. So Rick said, it should be on what do we do when God doesn't tell us? That's what he said. Didn't have to think about it. He just said, that's what the sermon should be on. I said, you know, that's an amazing comment you've just made. I said, on my desk at home, there's a set of notes that I had started on what do you do when God goes away that I keep looking at. I can't use that. That's no good. That won't work. That doesn't apply. And I ask you and you tell me that that's exactly what it is that I need to do. So I said, I can do that. I've already got some preparation. I really do know what I want to say. But I said, well, tell me, what does that mean? So we discussed it. And, you know, if they were a little braver, they could get up here and give the sermon themselves. I don't think it'd be braver, actually. But I'm just saying, actually explain to me through circumstances, and Rick more specifically through circumstances in his own personal life, why he said that. And yet it was an amazing thing. It was all of a sudden like God got on the phone, took me off hold and said, okay, here's what I want you to do. But the process to get there, again, was that I felt in various ways that I had been on hold. Notice a couple examples here. Notice 2 Chronicles as God works with us. 2 Chronicles, chapter 32, verse number 27. Hezekiah had very great riches and honor, and he made himself treasuries for silver, gold, and precious stones, for spices, shields, and for all kind of desirable items. Storehouses for the harvest of grain, wine, and oil, stalls for all kind of livestock, folds for flocks. Moreover, he provided cities for himself and possessions of flocks and herds in abundance, for God had given him very much property. This Hezekiah also stopped the water outlet of Upper Gihon and brought the water by tunnel to the west side of the city of David. Hezekiah prospered in all his works. He was faithful to God. He was God's servant dedicated to him. However, verse 31, regarding the ambassadors of the princes of Babylon, the son of the leader of the Babylonian Empire had inquired of Hezekiah because of his health and sent ambassadors to see, you know, to spy out the land effectively. Regarding the ambassadors of the princes of Babylon, whom they sent to him to inquire about the wonder that was done in the land, God withdrew from him, God stepped back in order to test him, that he might know all that was in his heart. Isn't that incredible? He's a faithful servant of God, whom God has blessed mightily, and he goes to God, in that sense, in his life, but when the time comes to make a decision, it says that God withdrew from him in order to see what was all that was in his heart. What God effectively said was, you make this decision, and you make it on your own. He said, you know what to do, but you make it on your own. Daniel 3 shows that process playing out in a little different way. Daniel 3 and verse 14. Excuse me, taking me a little time to find the page. Nebuchadnezzar had set up this great image, and he wanted everybody to bow down and worship before the image when he heard all this special music. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had refused to do so, and they were turned into the king. Verse 14, Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying to them, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the gold image that I have set up? Now, if you're ready at the time you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, harp, the lyre, psaltery, and symphony with all kinds of music, and you fall down and worship the image I've made, good. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you from my hands? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in the matter. We don't even need to think about it. We don't need to go pray and fast about it, because we know what it is that we must do. If that is the case, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us up from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if he steps back, it doesn't say it in those words, but that's what it's saying. But if he should choose to remove himself from this and simply let it play out, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. If not, if God steps back, then we still are not going to do what it is that you request of us. Now, you can imagine that they were all praying mightily for their deliverance. You can imagine that was true, crying out to God. But they also knew that sometimes God, in that way, removes himself from the decision process, because he wants to see what it is that we will do on our own. The fact is, most of the time, we know what to do. When we struggle, some of the time, what we're really struggling with is our own will, submitting our will to his. And we mask that in different ways, but we struggle sometimes to submit our will to his. Some of the decisions that we make really don't matter that much. And I say by they don't matter, I'm not saying it doesn't matter whether or not you have a nice home or whether or not your children are protected and safe and your family. I'm not saying that in that exact way. Those issues do matter. But the point is this. You can be a butcher or a baker or a candlestick maker, right? You could be any one of those things. And you could serve God. And you could live in Idaho or Nebraska or Wyoming and be any of those things, in most cases at least, if employment's available, and you could still serve God. And if you serve him faithfully and diligently, then most ways God indeed would bless you in what you do. So it's not a matter you have to choose for spiritual reasons some of these physical things. Those are options indeed that we do have. But the advice and counsel God gives us, at least in part, is in the book of Ecclesiastes in chapter 9. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 9 and 10. Live joyfully with your wife, whom you love, all the days of your vain or temporary life, all of the momentary experience which he's given you under the sun, all your days of vanity. That's your portion in life, and the labor which you perform under the sun. It doesn't say you live joyfully because you're so happy and everything works out. It says choose to live this way. Whatever your hand finds to do, butcher, baker, candlestick maker, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. Whether it's in Idaho or Nebraska or Wyoming. For there is no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you're going. You know, we focus on the part of this that focuses on death, and yet part of this focuses on life. And it just says, whatever you have to do, just do it. And do it with your might. And what God is saying is, indeed, I will bless your hands. I will bless the steps of your feet. You step, and I will strengthen you on your way. Sometimes there are a multitude of paths all going to the same place. It's just different scenery along the way. What God does want to know, though, is if indeed we will absolutely carry through. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego knew what they would do, but they just had to prove that they would do it. And God interceded and delivered them in the end. Maybe God just wanted to know absolutely what was in their hearts. Now look at another example. I know this is one that we ponder from time to time. I think naturally so, but in Mark chapter 15. To me, this is a rather dramatic example, and it helps me to try to understand it in this context. What do you do when God says, wait, or when God backs away? What do you do when God doesn't tell you? Mark 15 and verse 33. When the sixth hour had come, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour. In the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying this foreign words, which is translated, my God, why have you forsaken me? Jesus, God in the flesh, crying out to his Father, where are you? Why have you stepped back? Where did you go? That's what I read. Some of those who stood by, when they heard it, said, look, he's calling for Elijah. Someone ran, filled a sponge full of sour wine, put it on a reed, and offered it to him to drink, saying, let him alone. Let's see if Elijah will come and take him down. Jesus cried out with a loud voice and breathed his last. So the dying breath and the last thought are recorded here in the Bible. And the last thought before his breath that expired with his life was, where are you? Where did you go? Why did you step back and remove yourself from me? Christ had to die and remain faithful under those circumstances in that specific way. See, the problem is, again, sometimes when we're crying out to God, what we're crying out for is a way to get Him to accept our will, for making our will His instead of His ours as it should indeed be. If you have a business decision to make, then please do pray about it. But get counsel from people who make those same kind of decisions. If you have a relationship problem or decision to make, pray about it, but get counsel from people who have built successful relationships. I'll never forget being in a counseling where I assisted the pastor at that time, and a couple came in, each had been married, I think, 3 times, and they wanted to get married again to themselves, to each other. And they wanted to kind of counsel a bit, and the pastor was describing to them, see, he was a failure, he'd only been married once. You know, he just didn't have none of the kind of experience they had in this thing. And he began to try to advise and counsel them, and basically what they told him is, look, we have done this many times, we know what we're doing. We're experienced in these things. How would you know? You've only been married once. You know, I'm like going, my jaw drops open. I'm going, man. If you have a relationship question and you need counsel, again, pray about it, but get counsel from people who have succeeded, not from people who have failed. Now, failure has its own lessons. You know, in that respect, I'm probably one of the smartest people on earth. You know, because I have gone off to so many places and done so many things, and God in His mercy allowed me to serve Him. So there is indeed a lesson in failure, and if a person learns the lesson well, they can advise you. But if you have a business question, don't bring it to me. Take it to someone who is successful in a business that operates in those areas. Don't bring me a legal question. Take it to a lawyer. Take it to someone who has expertise in that way. But when you have a question on a relationship or something else again, and you go to God, that's good. But what does God say that we should then do in return? What is part of the reason why at times He steps back and does not answer? Because there may be another part of that process that needs to be fulfilled. Proverbs 11 and verse number 14. Where there is no counsel, the people fall. It's not talking about where there is no inspiration, where God is not available, where His Word isn't there. It says where there's no counsel. We're talking from each other, from people. You see, the church is a family for a reason. We're supposed to function together. We're supposed to bump into each other a little bit and build tolerance, and we're supposed to choose unity. We're supposed to reject division. We're supposed to forgive, and it means you need to have somebody who causes offense. And so God even allows Satan to mix in a few tares into the church just to stir things up a bit so that we can practice doing the right things. In a multitude of counselors, there is safety. My friend who wrote me at that time about the business failure that he had made, if he would have even asked me, I would have told him it was a mistake. And I'm not a businessman and not involved in business matters. I guarantee you, if he would have gone to anyone successfully invested in business, they would have told him it was a mistake as well. But he got invested in some way where he began to ask God according to his own will. And he simply didn't see it. And you know why? Because one of the hardest things to see in this flesh is the self. That's what a miracle of our calling is, God opening our mind to see ourselves, to see us as he sees us. And he lets us see just a tiny little bit, or we would be horrified. And that process then very slowly takes place. And I've mentioned before, if a person is self-righteous, do they say, you know, I am self-righteous. That's true. I like that. They don't think they're self-righteous. They think they're righteous. And a person is very judgmental and selfish in their focus. Do they think they're selfish? No. They don't think that at all, because it is the hardest thing to see. It is a miracle indeed when God opens our eyes to see ourselves. But one of the ways in which we can expose that is indeed seeking counsel on these matters by people who are invested in those ways. And I think you'll find indeed that response would be well delivered. Proverbs 13, verse number 10. By pride or selfish focus or going your own way comes only contention, but with the well advised is wisdom. I wonder if we really use each other in the way that we should in terms of advice. Because sometimes when we want something, what we really want is credentialing of what it is that we really want. The individual who came to me could have even so much as asked a family member, and the family member would have said, do not do this thing that you are set for, and could have saved him much grief. What happens when God steps back? Sometimes God steps back because he wants us to show indeed, to prove that we are absolutely committed and we will continue on and finish the course in the way that we have said. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. Jesus Christ dying on the cross. At that last and final moment, God stepped back and he had to die and have his consciousness flicker out in that way, remaining faithful and loyal and without sin. Sometimes God steps back because he wants us to exercise our will, because he wants to see if our will is indeed committed to his. And so he allows us to make those choices in that way. He wants us to reach out to each other because we are a family, a congregation, a unit of people, the body of Christ, and he wants us to function together, depending on and leaning on and helping and serving each other. He wants to make that opportunity available for someone to assist and help us in that way. When God steps back, it's for a reason, it's for a purpose. It's to fulfill his greater purpose and his will. We need to assess our heart and our mind and our will, and we need to learn to submit ourselves to him. We do that by counsel. We do that by encouraging each other, and we do that by doing what he has already said and doing it as long as we have breath and opportunity to serve before him in this way.